Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Cloudera on Federal News Network.
Shared services providers have to be concerned with the cybersecurity of their own systems and, to some degree, those of their customer agencies. For how one Defense Department service unit handles data related to cyber, I spoke with the technical director of the Cyber Development Directorate at the Defense Information Systems Agency, Drew Malloy, starting with what his office does.
The Cyber Development Directorate really encompasses all of the development for our cyber capabilities within the agency that we do both internally to support our mission for protecting and defending the DISN, and then externally for the enterprise. Those capabilities are mixed across the board, but it really, our portfolios break down to our endpoint portfolio, all things that we're putting on the endpoint at the DoD enterprise level, JRSS at really the mid-tier security, which no one needs introduction to JRSS, and then the perimeter capabilities that we have at all of our IAPs that we operate. And then mixed throughout there, we have our portfolio around enabling capabilities for infrastructure, and that's around identity, access management, ICAM, our PKI infrastructure we operate out of that, as well as Zero Trust and the Zero Trust reference architecture that we recently put out in conjunction with the NSA. And then kind of overarching over top of that is the cyber situational awareness portfolio that we have that essentially takes all of the data that's coming off of those sensors we have spread throughout the DoDIN and making sense of that for our operators, both internally within DISA and then externally at the enterprise level.
It sounds like you do a combination of development work, of monitoring operations work, and of policy work then.
Yeah, I would say that the majority of what we do is around development, but we work a lot in conjunction with operations within DISA and the services for that operations piece. And then policy, we work a lot with DoD CIO because they are really the policy arm for the department when it comes to IT.
And on the premise that cybersecurity protection and analysis has become a very data-driven situation, data-driven type of activity, what type of data do you collect? Where does it come from? Give us a sense of what your data stores are related to cybersecurity development.
So the data stores are really collecting based off of all the sensors that I mentioned previously, and there are specific groups that are actioned with those different missions, right? Perimeter protection being one of them, and then endpoint protection. How do we roll that data up to give a high-level dashboard and visibility to the department as the health of our endpoints? And then JRSS, of course, and how the services operate and control JRSS, as well as the actual defense mission of the JRSS security stacks, which DISA has as an operational mission as well. So all of those are throwing off a large amount of data, and we have to figure out where is the best and most appropriate place to put that data based off of the mission that and the customer base it's trying to serve.
Would it be accurate to say that the data gets collected, therefore, from almost every device on the network, all the routers and switches, as well as what's happening on end user devices and what their traffic looks like?
So I would say that there is a large amount of data that is collected off of all of those devices, right? Is all data collected everywhere, from here to the end of time? No, many would like that, but it's really not feasible, and it's up to us working in conjunction with operations to really know what our data is and figure out what is the important data, what is the relevant data, what are you looking to action on, and then segregating that between what our real-time systems are for alerting and monitoring and what our historical data stores are that help more with the troubleshooting forensics type of mission.
Yeah, so you have to have like a real-time picture to make sure that as an active attack might be happening, you're aware of it. But then there's an analytical side afterwards, and maybe what they call sometimes the long context, to get a sense of what the trends are or where something might have originated or what the nature of that was after the fact.
Yep, absolutely. And so a lot of times for our real-time missions, you'll be looking at something like a SIM capability, and like your Splunks, et cetera, to do that real-time alerting and monitoring piece, and then action on those alerts. Long-term, we have a big data platform that we use that does the mass storage for the long-term historical trending analytics and forensics that we can use.
And just give us a sense of how much of this data is collected and stored to be analyzed, either in the large context or specifically for a given incident.
I don't have numbers with me right now, but I will say that it is in the petabytes, and that is just for DISA's instance of our big data platform. The big data platform is actually shared amongst the services, and they have their own instantiations, and they are tracking petabytes as well as a unified platform that is really CyberComms and the Air Force as the executive agent is trying to pull all of that data together. So it's really a massive amount of data.
Yeah, petabyte seems to be the operative word across all of the agencies we've been talking to. They say that data, 25% of the world's knowledge was created in the last 2 years or something. Sometimes I think it's in the last 5 minutes that all of the data of the world has been created. And so,
right.
And maybe briefly describe the nature of the data. That is to say, there's a lot of formats and a lot of forms that the data takes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really depends. A lot of what we are doing from a sensor perspective is coming off of commercial sensors. There are some government-owned sensors, but there are commercial sensors that that sometimes are formatted based off commercial standards. Sometimes they're not. Government-owned systems. A lot of times, the data comes in different ways. So it's really tricky to make sure that we are ingesting data properly with the vast amount of sensors to make sure that everyone is calling an IP address the same thing, right?
And do you also subscribe to any of the external data sources that purport to monitor areas of the internet that no organization would have the resources to do themselves to augment the data you're collecting from the DISA sensors?
Right. There is a whole Intel feed side of this that helps to augment what it is we do. And then that in turn goes into how we set those indicators of compromise that we're alerting on.
Drew Malloy, Technical Director for the Cyber Development Directorate at the Defense Information Systems Agency. We'll be back with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Data travels at the speed of light, moving past us in every direction. It's easy to feel overwhelmed in the chaos of it all, but what if you could take it all in, refocus it, filter it, direct it? What would you discover? Something profound? Something beautiful? Something that moves you? The right data moves leaders and organizations to bring their vision to life. Cloudera, data that moves you. Visit cloudera.com/public sector to learn more.
Welcome back to our interview with Drew Malloy, Technical Director of the Cyber Development Directorate at the Defense Information Systems Agency. We are discussing cybersecurity data and how to best manage it.
There aren't hard and fast policies. We are driving towards operational requirements on retention. I would say that, like I said earlier, the requirement really should be all data forever, so that I can access it, right? But that's kind of where we bump up against physics and the actual resourcing within the agency and the department. So we have to make key decisions on what data we need retained and why, and then how do we segregate it to, hot storage that can be immediately accessed, kind of that warm storage, and then cold storage to where, we're able to push it off, and if need be, we can bring it back online to do some of that, troubleshooting and historical trending. But it's much cheaper if it is, in a cold storage type of environment, and that in turn helps save us for some of the more mission-oriented systems that we are trying to put resources in as well.
And the mass storage, is it in the cloud, or is DISA still buying huge storage infrastructure equipment?
So right now we're transitioning. We are starting to move a lot of what we're doing to the cloud. I know some of the services have started operating in the cloud as well. So cloud migration is a big thing throughout the department, right? And big data is no exception to that. I will say that we do have a significant SIPR presence, as well as some isolated secret networks. And so we can't make that transition just yet. We're still awaiting what that enterprise solution is going to be, but we're starting more on the NIPR side. But yes, we do have a footprint on big iron sitting in data centers, as well as moving towards cloud-based environments.
And as you move toward cloud-based environments, or as it's stored in DISA facilities, there's the concept of data lake. And I'm not sure that's a mental construct, or is it an actual architecture for storage design? And what's your approach there?
So the data lake concept is really what we encompass with our big data platform, is to say taking structured and unstructured data feeds and putting it into a storage mechanism that can be searched upon, right? That's and developing specific analytics to be able to show specific indicators of compromise and or historical trends that help us make decisions. So that's really more of that's really not the real-time mission. The data lake piece is really more on the long-term storage and historical piece.
And do you have a set of tools that do all of this analysis? And when data is in the cloud, then the question becomes, where does the compute occur? Because I don't think anyone wants to upload petabytes of data to the cloud only to have to download it next week to analyze it.
Right. Absolutely. And so that's really part of the strategy moving forward. Like I said earlier, with big data, there's platforms operated by the different services that are interconnected, and we can do distributed queries across those platforms. But it's not mandating us to centralize all of that data to a single point. That's for performance reasons, that's really not something that we are looking to do. And two, in most cases, it's physically just not possible for us to do that. So how do we get it then? And you brought up cloud, which is very relevant in this case. How do we keep compute within the cloud and we don't incur some of the costs around data egress and things like that? So how do we make this more economical and looking at how we make data actionable at the source, right, where it's being ingested?
And with respect to the indicators of compromise, is there any way that you can get a sense of what the motivations of would-be attackers are, given that DISA is a supplier, in effect, shared services provider in some ways to the entire Defense Department? It might be a different motivation coming to DISA than they would have going to National Bank of Wichita.
Sure, yeah, and DISA really sees, and because of DISA's mission around perimeter defense, right, and operating the internet access points, both CONUS and OCONUS, we really see a different type of attack vector, and that's where that mission set is separate and distinct from what you would see if you say would be on the commercial side. So DISA has a unique perspective both on the perimeter piece and then supplying the enterprise capabilities.
All right, and with respect to the historical trends, have you noticed changes over the years in motivation and attack vectors and so forth? There must be a treasure trove of wisdom in all of that.
Yeah, there absolutely is. As the developer of capabilities, I don't want to go out too far on a limb and have the operational community come after me with knives, but there absolutely is. And I think that we are starting to look at from a trending piece for developing capabilities, how do we move more of our tool sets and the data that we're pulling off into the application and data layer? Instead of, we've been very heavily network focused in the past and with good reason, but As threats are evolving, you are starting to see a trend more towards the application and data layer, especially when you are, in essence, distributing a lot of that trust and a lot of that responsibility to a cloud service provider, right? So how do we move to the data and the application and monitoring and where we can bring value?
And we've been talking about endpoints, and we've been talking about the JCSS, the stack, the security stacks that the Defense Department operates. There's a third element that a lot of agencies are thinking about and using in many cases, and I think this is true of DoD also, and that is the edge compute capability, especially with forward deployed military units or remote ones where there's not great reach back or it's expensive or it's a impaired type of environment. And how do you bring that into the whole monitoring picture such that you get the data that might be happening that you would want to know about at edge computing devices as opposed to mobile devices and end user devices?
Right. And that's absolutely key. And that's where kind of that distributed computing architecture comes into play to figure out how we put a capability as close to the edge as possible, where it can, you know, one, it can be actionable by the actual mission owners who are at that data edge, but two, it's standard and formatted correctly so that you can report up to higher headquarters. We can help share analytics, indicators of compromise down, right? And that data sharing occurs, and that really comes back to that common data standard piece that we talked about earlier.
Drew Malloy, Technical Director of the Cyber Development Directorate at the Defense Information Systems Agency. We'll return with the third and final segment of the interview after the short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Data travels at the speed of light, moving past us in every direction. It's easy to feel overwhelmed in the chaos of it all, but what if you could take it all in, refocus it, filter it, direct it? What would you discover? Something profound? Something beautiful? Something that moves you? The right data moves leaders and organizations to bring their vision to life. Cloudera, data that moves you. Visit cloudera.com/public sector to learn more.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of our interview with Drew Malloy, Technical Director of the Cyber Development Directorate at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Our topic is cybersecurity data and how to manage it. And you're throwing applications, security applications, analysis applications against those petabytes of data. And to some degree, those petabytes are moving around from cold to hot storage or hot to cold. And so what is the strategy for ensuring that the security data itself remains secure?
Yeah, no, and that's a huge principle that we have, because when you think about your biggest cyber related data repositories, that is a huge vector for attackers, right? That is a treasure trove of information, and we need to protect that as much as possible. So it comes down to the basics, you know, the cyber hygiene, the RMF process, but then bringing in a lot of, some of these concepts around continuously scanning, making sure that we're encrypting our data to the maximum extent possible, and then bringing in things around access control, around least privilege, and best practices around making sure that only those who have a need to know for that data can access that data, and bringing that encryption down to the data layer so they may have access to the application, but they don't have access to that data.
Because I imagine hackers may not necessarily want to take the data and download it and purloin it, but they might want to inject something into it just to make you think, golly, let's look over there, when in fact they're operating over there, the other side.
Absolutely. Or delete something, right?
Right, to cover their tracks.
Covering their tracks.
And with all of this work in various storage architectures for cybersecurity data, are there any standards? Are there any industry types of modes that are accepted, open standards type of things that help you design how you store it and use it?
So there are some standards. We really need to work with industry more to make sure that we standardize as much as possible, because especially within the realm of cybersecurity, while some things are pretty static and stay the same, things are constantly changing. New tools are coming out, new technologies, and we need to make sure, especially when we're looking at those new technologies, that the data is both standard and interoperable, right? How do we make sure that if I have a tool that is, say, a gateway, and it will only allow certain endpoints that it feels, you know, meets its criteria. How do I make sure that if, you know, other endpoints want to come and play, they don't have to have that, you know, specific agent on their endpoint, right? Or if there's a separate gateway, how do we make sure they're interoperable so they're sharing information? And so we don't get into these siloed issues with a lot of the tools that we're purchasing.
At some level, there is the actual data that you need, and above that is the formatting of the device that produced it. So the trick then is to get through the formatting to the actual data, and that's where you get to interoperability?
Right. Absolutely, right. And that's key for the end user and the operator to make sure that all of the telemetry that's coming off, because if you're moving towards more of a zero trust model, that's kind of that end-to-end session-based view of security, you're no longer siloed at the perimeter, at the midpoint, at the endpoint. You're trying to pull information and context across all of those. So having standardized data and making sure everyone's calling an apple is key to making sure that at the end, that pane of glass that the operator is looking at is really a consolidated view, and they don't, you know, we don't have to do a bunch of gymnastics in order to make sure that we're tracking properly.
And with respect to one last question on indicators of compromise, these could be pieces of code that are inserted somewhere in a network coming to being the basis for an advanced persistent threat, for example. But what about anomalous behavior from, say, a trusted user? This may be where the zero trust comes in, but all of a sudden an endpoint is downloading data way out of proportion to what it normally does, and it happens to be Saturday night or something like that.
Right. Yeah, and that's where we get into kind of the insider threat and the user activity monitoring piece of this, and make sure that we're establishing that pattern of life, that known good of this is what current operations looks like. And if it goes above certain thresholds, we need to investigate, right? To say, this is still an allowed practice, but if this is happening, it's suspicious enough that we need to investigate. It's not like we hit on malware or things like that. It's a little bit more of a nuanced approach to how we look at the data we're ingesting.
And nobody can look at all of that happening across the defense enterprise, so you must have some AI ML types of apps to get to the operators and say, this is what you need to look at.
Right. And that's and bringing an automation tool too is going to be a huge thing, right? Because if they get 100, you know, indicators of compromise, they can't action on all of them. But if you take away that, you know, first, second, third step that they have to do in the automation piece, and or some of the more trivial responses, you're able to automate and they can concentrate their efforts on higher level, more impactful actions, then it's going to be a net benefit, because our analyst community is struggling with manpower resources as it is. So trying to get it to where we are taking as much burden as we can off of that analyst community based off the systems we deploy is going to be key.
Drew Malloy, Technical Director of the Cyber Development Directorate at the Defense Information Systems Agency. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for August, sponsored by Cloudera on Federal News Network.
Data travels at the speed of light, moving past us in every direction. It's easy to feel overwhelmed in the chaos of it all, but what if you could take it all in, refocus it, filter it, direct it? What would you discover? Something profound? Something beautiful? Something that moves you? The right data moves leaders and organizations to bring their vision to life. Cloudera, data that moves you. Visit cloudera.com/public sector to learn more.